I'm Lenore Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at how elections can impact people's health and well-being. But first, Sierra Leone has started injecting the first of thousands of frontline workers with a preventive Ebola vaccine, a decade after the disease ravaged parts of West Africa, killing more than 11,000 people. Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia were the worst affected countries 10 years ago in what was the largest Ebola outbreak since the virus was first discovered in 1976. Sierra Leone is the first of the three countries to launch a national Ebola vaccination campaign, which will target 20,000 frontline workers. Healthcare professionals and those most at risk of being exposed to the disease, such as first responders, traditional healers, religious leaders, and security forces, will receive a single dose of the Ervebo vaccine. Nigerian authorities are seeking to launch a National Action Plan on Gender-Based Violence, or GBV. Nigeria's lower house of parliament made the announcement as lawmakers joined activists for a rally to coincide with a campaign known as 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Hundreds of people, including women's rights activists, Nigerian lawmakers, and other participants, chanted as they walked from the National Assembly through the streets of Abuja on Monday. The rally was part of Nigeria's participation in the United Nations-backed 16 Days of Activism Campaign Against Gender-Based Violence, or GBV, running from November 25th to December the 10th. But it was also an opportunity to announce the latest efforts by authorities to address gender-based violence in Nigeria. Abbas Tajuddin, Nigeria's Speaker of the House of Representatives, led lawmakers to the rally. It took place on the 25th anniversary of the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women.
For every 10 minutes, a woman is being killed across the world. This is an unacceptable trend. This is an unforgivable trend. We in the parliament must have to unite more than ever before with relevant authorities, particularly the law enforcement, in ensuring that we cut this dangerous trend to the barest minimum.
Gender-based violence is a global problem. Nigerian authorities say about one-third of women between 15 and 49 experiences physical and sexual assault in her lifetime. The country also accounts for approximately 20 million GBV survivors, or about 10% of the global total. Poor awareness, a low rate of reporting, cultural and religious biases, and trust deficits in the justice system are some of the challenges hampering efforts to address GBV in Nigeria. Raquel Kashem Daniel is the founder of the nonprofit Beyond the Classroom Foundation, which promotes the rights of girls through education and advocacy.
I think that policies that protect women and put, you know, perpetrators behind bars would be very helpful. One we're championing with is the Sexual Harassment Bill in tertiary education. That would be a very good one to pass. And we hope that it gets the presidential assent soon.
Nigeria had previously launched a sex offenders registry to name and shame perpetrators of violence against women. On Monday, Women Affairs Minister Imam Sulaiman Ibrahim announced the launch of a national electronic dashboard system to improve data collection and accountability. Sulaiman Ibrahim also said, besides preventive measures, authorities will review existing laws to ensure they protect survivors of gender-based violence.
This occasion provides us yet another opportunity to renew those commitments and take deliberate actions to protect the rights, safety, and dignity of women, girls, and vulnerable people across Nigeria.
As authorities continue to make efforts to address the problem, many hope the new intervention offers a lifeline to millions of vulnerable people. Africa recorded the highest rates of intimate partner and family-related femicide last year, followed by the Americas and Oceania, according to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Experts say violence against women and girls is one of the drivers of the high rate of HIV/AIDS among this population. According to the UN, almost one in three women has been subjected to physical and/or sexual intimate partner violence, non-partner sexual violence, or both, at least once in their life globally. I spoke with Professor Rosemary Ogu, president of the Medical Women's Association of Nigeria, and asked her reaction on how gender-based violence contributes to the rate of HIV among women and girls and how her organization is championing the rights of this population.
My reaction is one of horror. It's horrifying. It's really horrific to see what kind of results that we have. It's a terrible thing.
Yes, it's a terrible thing. And the theme this year for the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence is time to act now. What do these actions look like for the Medical Women's Association of Nigeria? Where are the urgencies?
So for us at the Medical Women's Association of Nigeria, we're looking at educating female health workers because we need them to be able to know how to respond to victims. We need them to know what exactly to do to ensure that victims are okay and that victims have justice, because justice is one of the endpoints. If you have the violence perpetrated against you and there's no justice, you don't heal. Mm-hmm. So part of what the Medical Women's Association is doing is ensuring that the healthcare workers can respond to these victims appropriately.
What specific challenges do female health workers face regarding gender-based violence? And what steps is your organization taking to address these issues?
So what we are doing as an organization for this year's 16 Days of Activism is partnering with organizations, other organizations, non-governmental organizations, agencies. Particularly for this year, we are partnering with the French Embassy to ensure that we have social media campaigns for the entire 16 days duration. So starting from the 25th of November until the 10th of December, we're giving out information, correcting myths and misconceptions, and then having a webinar for the students in schools to give them information, and then having another webinar for healthcare providers to give them knowledge and skills about how they can take care of victims.
Observers say that the right policies are needed to help the right of women and girls when it comes to gender-based violence. What do you think perhaps one of such policy will look like, especially in Nigeria, and what is your organization's priority in terms of working with stakeholders to ensure that the right policies are created and are implemented?
So the right policies need to be in place and they need to be implemented. We have policies. We have the Violence Against Persons Bill in Nigeria. Unfortunately, in many states, sub-national and national levels, those bills are not implemented. So the implementation of policies is a big challenge that we face. So as Medical Women's Association of Nigeria, we advocate to policymakers, to healthcare providers, to government, to agencies, to you, our media partners, to let everyone know that we need the right policies in place and we need those policies to be implemented to be able to bring justice and closure for our women. Just concluded World HIV Day. You can see that the prevalence is increasing from violence. All right? It's the violence being perpetrated is increasing the prevalence of HIV. So we need to do a lot to ensure that we can bring down the prevalence and give people support.
Okay, Professor Ogu, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. Greetings from Nigeria.
We turn now to elections. No matter where they occur, elections can take a significant mental toll on individuals and communities, according to medical experts. The heightened political tension, uncertainty about outcomes, and in some countries, the fear of violence often lead to stress, anxiety, and emotional fatigue. Elections in Africa are often marked by high stakes and heightened tension, posing significant health risks to voters in some cases. Experts states in Ghana highlight how campaign activities, voter fatigue, and fear of political tension and violence during this period results in increased road crashes and severe mental stress. Sinanu Todd reports from Accra, Ghana.
Election seasons in Africa are often turbulent, characterized by vibrant campaigns, street rallies, protests, and occasional violence. And experts say the physical nature of these activities can take a toll on voters. According to the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data, ACLED, an independent NGO collecting data on violent conflict and protest around the world, since 2000, nearly 50% of election-related violence globally has occurred in Africa, exposing citizens to significant health risk. Ghanaian Ministry of Health's National Ambulance Service Director of Operations, Foster Anson Brijal, says while violence is a concern, road crashes are the leading health hazard during elections.
Because of the parties moving around, campaigning, some deep into the night, and so the drivers become tired. And so we know driver fatigue also leads to crashes, road traffic crashes. So we've observed that anytime we are in an election, the number of crashes goes up.
According to the National Road Safety Authority, during election years, road crashes in Ghana spike up by approximately 10%, as security resources are often redirected to crowd control and campaign security. Limited road law enforcement during this period exacerbates the problem. Anson Brijam says another health concern is physical exhaustion and dehydration, and long hours at campaign events and standing in queues to vote take a toll on many citizens.
Some of them, they don't even eat because they want to go early and then go and cast their votes. So they don't eat. They will stay in the queue for a very longer time. And some become dehydrated. Some also becomes hypoglycemia sets in because they've not eaten. And so some may be faint. Some may even collapse.
Isaac Newman Arthur is a clinical psychologist and spokesperson for the Ghana Psychologist Association. He says beyond physical health, the stress and tension surrounding elections can severely impact the mental well-being, especially of individuals with pre-existing conditions.
Depending on whatever happened during the political season, someone may never recover from the impact of whatever they went through, and that can be lifelong.
Arthur highlights how traumatic experiences, such as the loss of loved ones, or financial hardships under specific regimes, can leave voters with long-term anxiety, fear, and trauma.
And if people have lost relatives, lost their job, they've had some financial difficulties, security may not have been good for them, health systems and economy and all those issues are affecting them, then the dread of experiencing a particular government for the next 4 years can actually create a lot of problems.
As Ghana gears up for general elections on December 7, 2024, to elect the president and members of parliament, the National Ambulance Service is stepping up its preparedness to address these health risks. Its Emergency Medical Service Supervisor, Daniel Asari, says they are equipped with modern ambulances and trained personnel and ready to help mitigate health hazards.
As part of this election preparation, National Ambulance Service have been able to give basic first aid training to these institutions like the police service, fire service and immigration and prisons. So we did a training program for them so that they will be able to get certain basic first knowledge.
Authorities at Ghana's Ambulance Service say while elections mark a pivotal moment in democracy, they also bring health challenges, and they are working to minimize these health risks and ensure a safer process for all citizens. Sena Anutor, VOA Africa, Accra, Ghana.
We asked, how do you feel as election season is approaching? In your country? Do elections cause you stress or affect your mental state? And what strategies do you use to manage the stress or anxiety triggered by elections? Here are some reactions from listeners in Abidjan as they prepare for the next presidential elections in 2025.
I used to be a little bit stressed because we had some moments in our country. But today, with the country's stability and the information we have, now there's an awareness, so I'm confident that the elections will go well.
Some stress, yes, from what we had to go through in the past years. So yes, we usually approach elections with a bit of stress because we don't know what to expect.
I've been through two elections, so I'm used to managing my stress by now. And with the approach of this election, I feel excited because we see an initiative from the youth toward this election that wasn't there in the previous ones.
Since we are in a democratic country, the power is to the people. So we should approach it with calmness as we are the ones who are voting. So there's no need to complicate things, and we need to stay calm.
I think it's all about awareness. I appeal to every citizen to be positive, to avoid negative thoughts, and I encourage everyone to vote so his candidate can win.
Dr. Aisha Buba is a psychologist and executive director of the Sunshine Series and Idima Health Initiative in Abuja, Nigeria. She discusses some common psychological effects of elections on people and steps to manage stress and anxiety during elections.
If you look at the way elections have always happened, there is always that tension, there is always that fear, that feelings of uncertainty, how is the outcome going to be, what kind of change is it going to bring. So all of those fears, uncertainty and all can lead to anxiety. I think first and foremost, we need to acknowledge, we need to let ourselves know that elections are not a joke. They are not beans. It's a serious thing. And, you know, give yourself grace that it's expected that it can trigger anxiety for you. Once you acknowledge that, it means you are now prepared, right? And if you're prepared, then it now helps you to put measures in place to manage that anxiety. So, for example, as much as you can, you know, we easily get so drawn to listening to all sorts of news, negative news, fake news, in fact, things being shared on social media and whatnot. And those things also agitate you and increase your anxiety levels. And most times, those are not even things that you have any control over, right? So try as much as possible to limit your exposure to all those type of things, those type of information, those type of things that can trigger you, right? Because once you don't know, then it won't heighten your sense of anxiety, right? Sometimes you find when there is election tension, that's when some people want to be controversial. That's when they want to be problematic. Try to avoid engaging with such people. Engage with people who are like minds like you, who would be encouraging, who would be supportive, who would also notice that if you're struggling, they would be there to support you. And I think there is more safety in when you are a part of a support network as opposed to if you were isolated.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn to a problem that affects millions worldwide, erectile dysfunction or ED, sometimes known as impotence. In some African countries, up to 30% of men experience impotence, with the number rising among those over 40. Impotence is a growing concern among men in Ivory Coast, often leading to isolation. Amid stigmatization and a search for solutions, doctors and therapists are coming together to offer support. Yassine Sio reports from Abidjan, Côte d'Ivoire.
It has been 3 years since 23-year-old Junior lost what he calls his manhood. The cause? Erectile dysfunction, or ED, which disrupted his love life and plunged him into a deep sadness that persists to this day.
When I had sex with my partner, my penis couldn't even stay erect. I was engaged in intercourse, but I could feel that I wasn't really erect. She said hurtful things to me like, "You are not a man. You can't satisfy a woman." I didn't tell anyone about it. I only told my friend. Not even my brother or sister knew. It's just too shameful.
While studies specifically from Ivory Coast may be limited, general findings in African populations suggest that ED is often linked to chronic diseases, lifestyle, cultural, and societal factors. In many African countries, including Ivory Coast, social stigma surrounding sexual health issues can result in underreporting of ED, a subject of great concern for doctors. Dr. Fadli Koulibaly explains.
If the cause is anxiety, we offer therapy. If it's diabetes, we treat the diabetes. If it's related to sickle cell anemia, we address that. As a radiologist, I see patients who want to undergo a penile echo, but many don't even know this procedure exists. It's an important test to help identify the cause of erectile dysfunction. However, for this to happen, the patient needs to come to the hospital, where the doctor can assess their condition and determine the cause. This is the only way we can offer a proper treatment, unlike in other places where people are given quick fixes without understanding the possible long-term consequences.
In the heart of Abidjan, Riviera 2, a clinic offers a sanctuary for men who suffer from this condition. Dr. Aka Felix is a natural health practitioner known for his holistic approach to treating erectile dysfunction. He says he offers simple solutions to help men who are, quote, wounded in their pride.
Look at the average person's diet today. It's largely made up of cooked foods. But cooking strips away many essential nutrients. This is one reason why erectile dysfunction is becoming more common. Take celery, for example. If you drink a glass of celery stick juice every day to 4 or 5 days, you could experience up to 60% improvement in erectile function.
Some men turn to less conventional solutions, using natural treatments and home remedies, many of which promise miraculous results. Eunice Arethi is a trader who sells one of the country's most popular traditional medicines for ED, the Goro toothpick. According to medical journals, Terea heterophylla is a shrub whose root has been used for centuries as a sexual stimulant due to its aphrodisiac properties. It's believed to restore a strong erection, even for those suffering from severe dysfunction.
The toothpick is a root that's straight from the ground in the village. It's completely natural.
You just chew the toothpick every day and it starts working. Men can last 1 hour, 2 hours in bed without ejaculating. Voilà, et c'est très, très beau.
However, these so-called traditional remedies are not without their risks. In fact, the Ivorian government recently banned several of them due to their toxicity. The public health measure aims to prevent further harm to those already suffering from this deeply personal issue. For Yassine Siaw in Abidjan, Ivory Coast, Anthony Libruto, VOA News.
We asked the viewers how informed they were about erectile dysfunction and what women could do to support their partners suffering from the condition. Here are some of their reactions.
Yes, I've heard about erectile dysfunction. It mostly affects men. This is a condition where a man is not able to erect.
There should be enough public awareness about what exactly erectile dysfunction is, and that tell people that it's not witchcraft, you know. It's just an abnormality and it's just a normal human being, and there shouldn't be a stigma, you know, put onto men or pressure to deliver and everything.
In the society, most of the time, it's kept under wrap because people are ashamed of saying about it, and men mostly suffer in silence without saying about it.
I think it's for a man, failure to have sex is a big issue. So the woman should understand the man and avoid castigating the man for not being able to satisfy the woman in bed. So if the woman aggravates the situation by shouting at the man or by excessively demanding that sex when the man cannot, the situation gets out of hand. So the woman should be able to be on a point of understanding what the man is doing so that they go through this, they can seek help.
To support your man, you should maybe visit a doctor who will be able to assist in that.
Dr. Bello Abdul Hakim is a urologist at the National Hospital in Abuja, Nigeria. He explains the causes and consequences of erectile dysfunction and shares some strategies on how men can treat this condition.
Erectile dysfunction is the inability to get the penis erect for the purpose of sexual interaction with one's spouse. Even when you can get the penis erect, if it is not able to perform the function, specifically penetration, it is also considered as erectile dysfunction. As professionals, we class the causes into about two. Most erectile dysfunction is as a result of psychological issues. So if you're having economic issues, if you're having issues with your job, or even issues with your spouse, it can affect your ability to have erection. And then the second one, which is not as common, is where there's actually something that causes the erectile dysfunction, either an accident or drugs that you're using, illnesses like hypertension, diabetes. These are illnesses that you know people begin to have as they grow older. So the disease itself, hypertension, diabetes, can cause erectile dysfunction. And treatment for the disease can also cause erectile dysfunction. Someone who has prostate cancer or some prostate issues and is having treatment for prostate issues, some of the drugs also cause side effects. After certain surgeries, if you have radical surgery for prostate cancer, it can affect your ability to have erection. So see, these are some of the common causes of the pathological erectile dysfunction. So we say erectile dysfunction can be psychological or organic. So psychological, because of the state of the mind. Organic, because of an accident, drugs, or some other illnesses. Most men don't want to be vulnerable enough to say, I have some problem with my masculinity. So you find people not willing to seek care when they begin to have problems. And this affects how quickly they're able to be diagnosed and treated and how they present themselves. And it also affects your ability to measure the true communal weight of the problem. To be able to say, okay, this is actually the number of people suffering because they are reluctant to come out to seek care. So a lot of them begin to use traditional medication or some other stuff without seeking health care, without trying to know exactly what is going on with them. They begin to also act out within the house to avoid interacting maybe with their spouses in such a manner and go outside to experiment in order to test their masculinity. So these are the ways that they manifest. We have to raise the level of education of the general populace, as well as the health consciousness and the health-seeking attitude. The moment you improve all this, more people will feel confident enough to come out to talk and to talk about these problems. Some of the other things you can do is, and the more confident they are, the more they realize they are not alone in suffering from these conditions, and it opens up the both the level of the conversation as well as the options available for.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
That is all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us, and thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudu in Washington, with producer Mugbili Abaro. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays.